Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Deacon Scott, and the gospel passage I just read you, the parable, is actually well known as the most difficult saying that Jesus ever said. It's a thing that people have the most trouble with. I had people going out after the previous Mass saying, "Oh, you're so right. I did not know what to do with that passage." So it's a very difficult parable. And I was going to tease Father Ed and say that actually he saw that coming and he said, "Hey, why don't you preach on that?" But that's not what happened. It was on the schedule, and there's actually a longer and a shorter reading. So I could have dodged this if I wanted to. But I thought, you know, this is something that people really wonder about. So why don't we take a look at it and see if I can help you to understand it a little better. So let's look at this parable. Here's what bugs people about it. It's often called the dishonest steward. So there's a wealthy man, a landowner, and he has an administrator or steward running his property. And it is reported to him that the steward is being dishonest, and we would think stealing from him. So he summarily fires the steward, and he asks to see the books. Then the steward calls in the debtors, and he writes down all their debts. And on the surface, it looks like he's giving away even more of the master's money. The problem is, everything would be fine so far. He looks like a scoundrel. But the parable ends with the master complimenting him for his shrewdness, for how prudent he is. So we're like, what? And then it gets even worse. Jesus uses that example of shrewdness to make his point. So we're thinking, wait a minute. Jesus praises the steward for his prudence or his shrewdness in dealing with worldly affairs, but he seems to ignore the fact that he was being dishonest. That creates a problem. So let's deal with the first thing here, the word dishonest. Is he really a dishonest steward, even though that's clearly what our translation says? The original word behind this is not actually the word dishonest. If you look it up in a lexicon, a dictionary for Greek, it doesn't say dishonest anywhere. It is a word that implies wrongdoing of some kind, but it can mean unjust, unrighteous, maybe kind of wicked in a vague kind of way. And then at the very beginning of the parable, it says that charges were brought against him. And this word actually usually means false charges. So it's a word that very often means someone brought a calumnious false charge against him. So is he really guilty, or did some jealous person try to take him out? We don't know. The charge is not stealing directly. He's not embezzling from the master, but he is squandering. Literally, the word means to spread the stuff around, scattering the wealth of the master, wasting money. But is it a true accusation? We don't know. So perhaps if it's true, what he's doing is taking advantage of his position and wastefully, in an unprofitable way, using the money for himself. We then hear this man go into a monologue. He starts talking to himself. He says to himself, "What am I to do?" Now, this monologue is important because if he had been stealing large amounts of money, he would not be as desperate as he sounds in this monologue. He's like, "I'm finished. This is terrible." If he was sitting on a big pile of money, he would have gone, "Oh, well, maybe I'll go buy a farm." Okay, so the steward then summons the debtors in, and he rewrites all their debts. And you could think that he's stealing even more money from the owner of the estate. Maybe he's even trying to get even with him. "You fired me, so I'm going to give away even more money." Or maybe he's just trying to gain favor with these other people. But if you think about his real motives, he's either trying to get his job back, or he would like the position of steward in another estate. And if word gets out that he's treated the previous master like this, he's never going to work again. So again, this just doesn't work. It doesn't seem right for him to behave this way. And then the thing that is the most astounding, as I said, he is praised for his behavior, which doesn't seem to make any sense. So this whole thing is just very confusing. The traditional understanding would be that Jesus praises him for his shrewdness, but ignores his dishonesty. Well, modern scholars have looked at this and gone, we have to find some other answer to this, because this just doesn't make sense. How could this be? So they come up with a couple of proposals. Two of them don't really work, but they're interesting. One is that maybe the master of this estate was charging interest on the goods and the money that he was lending to people. Now, according to the Old Testament law, you were not allowed to charge any interest. Interest was a sin. No interest. Hope the bank hears that. just kidding. But so it was against the law. So maybe he just gave back the interest, and that would make him not a bad person, but a righteous person, because he's following the law. The problem is the math doesn't work. Okay? The way that this is described, he's taking the entire amount that's owed and he's reducing it. He's not just reducing the portion that would be the interest. So scholars have looked at this and said, and it's way too complicated. The ordinary folk that were listening, would they understand this? No. So let go of that one. Another one is the idea that maybe he was charging a commission for his services and he gives back his commission. Or maybe he just pays down the debt out of his own money. He wouldn't be dishonest. But from his desperate monologue, does he sound like he's sitting on a pile of money? Again, no. Okay, so neither of these really work. But there is a solution that they have discovered that completely answers what's going on here. And this has to do with the way tenant farmers would relate to the estate owners. Estate owners would hire tenants to work the land. They were expected to have their own equipment and their own labor. And usually, when the harvest came in, there would be a contract that a certain amount of the harvest would go back to the owner of the estate, or possibly it would be sold and he would get cash. The thing is that if you had a bad year, he didn't change the amount that was owed. So let's say there was a famine or there was difficult times for a couple of years, you could end up owing an enormous amount of money to the landowner, so much so that you wouldn't have money left to eat, or in some cases, not even enough to reseed the land. So it could be quite destructive. Because of this, the owners of property like this realized this was bad for business. This wasn't a very good business practice to drive your farm into the ground so it wasn't making any money. So at intervals, and when necessary, they would actually voluntarily forgive some of the debt that the tenants owed to them. It was actually difficult to find new tenants, so it doesn't make sense in our modern world. Can you imagine the bank saying, well, you're having a tough time, we're going to forgive half your mortgage? Okay? It's not going to happen. But in the ancient world, this was a very common practice. To keep the farm profitable, from time to time, they would adjust how much debt the tenant farmers would owe. And if we apply this to the parable, then it makes sense. So the steward has chosen this particular moment to adjust all the debts. And of course, it's very beneficial to him, but in this culture, this ancient Near Eastern culture, they were very sensitive to shame and humility and honor. And in a sense, by doing this, he restores the honor of the owner of the property, he restores his own honor, and he even restores the honor of the tenants. So win, 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 everybody's happy. So it makes sense that you could compliment this as very shrewd and yet not think that he was stealing or doing something dishonest. He might not have been. All right, with this background to the parable then, perhaps the steward begins, if he was originally guilty, living a kind of selfish life. The word squander is actually the same word that's used in the previous parable of the prodigal son. He squanders the wealth that he had. So maybe he was just kind of being selfish and living off this income, but he kind of has a conversion with, he's kind of forced into it, but he changes his mind and he suddenly is concerned for the tenants and he makes this all right. So really we have this pattern of undeserved forgiveness of debt, which sounds a lot like the gospel. Are we not also in a tremendous debt to Jesus, to our Lord? And was this debt completely undeserved by us, paid by Jesus on the cross? So the whole message of the gospel is about a kind of debt that is paid. So this metaphor that Jesus uses is very close to a kind of gospel understanding. It follows a very familiar pattern: awareness of sin, encounter with the truth of the gospel, a change of heart, followed by a change of life. And this does sound like something we could praise. So the gospel is always about forgiveness, but the implication of forgiveness is often a changed life. Several chapters later in Luke, we meet a tax collector whose name is Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus encounters Jesus and he immediately has a conversion. And as a result of his conversion, he gives away half of his possessions to the poor. And he immediately makes amends for any bad business deals that he had been conducting in the past. He pays back all those people and even adds more. So it really is an example of someone encountering the gospel, changing, and then their life becomes something different. In his application of this parable, Jesus contrasts faithfulness with unrighteousness. And this is unrighteousness in the midst of our worldly affairs. In our translation, it talks about dishonest wealth. I don't really like that translation. I think that it would be better to translate it worldly wealth. Some other translations say unrighteous wealth. When we're in the world, it's pretty hard to avoid being connected to worldly things, as we're in the world. And so perhaps money is always kind of tainted a little bit in this sense. But Jesus doesn't condemn wealth or being wealthy. He simply directs us to use this well. So he tells them, use this worldly wealth to gain friends so that you can influence them for the kingdom. The passage also indicates that we could use wealth for almsgiving to help the poor. So there is ways to be enmeshed in the world and still use wealth in a right way. Worldly wealth then is not to be selfishly squandered, but to be used in the service of the kingdom. Jesus' words about faithfulness in little things reminds us of something else. All of our life here on earth forms a kind of unity. We cannot come to church on Sunday and then cheat people on the stock market on Monday. Every aspect of our life is connected to our faith. We need to live our faith in the midst of the world, even the secular world. Our daily activities can be a means of our sanctification, bringing holiness to us and others. And if we're really serving God in our secular life, we would be able to say not, thank God it's Friday, but thank God it's Monday. Imagine what would happen this week if each one of us offered up our daily lives in an unselfish sacrifice to God.